This is Nancy Gallagher in New Orleans interviewing Amini Jamal at the Sheraton Hotel on Canal Street, Middle East Studies and AMU's meetings. And we have just a very few questions and to ask, but important ones, I think. So, Amini, why do you think JMU's was founded or needed, or both?
So I think it was definitely needed, and when it was founded, it was definitely the right time. My understanding of the history of AMU's is that there wasn't a space or a forum for scholars studying women and the Middle East at Mesa. And this became even more pervasive. At least the stories that I hear, that what I've always been told, is that this issue became even more pervasive when it was clear that several of the dance parties that were being held at Mesa featured belly dancers. So it was, for feminist scholars of Mesa, it was sort of like a double whammy. Like, A, there's no space, and B, this is how, there's no space for feminist scholarship at Mesa, and B, this is how women are represented at Mesa. And this created a lot of anxiety and frustration and advocacy, and it led to mobilization to create AMU's. And so AMU's sort of emerges from this space where there was very much a lack of representation, a lack of voice for feminist scholarship.
Certainly my memory of being there for the Great Chicago Walkout during one of these belly dance events. In any case, what role do you think AMU's has had in feminist academic studies?
I think it's played this amazing and influential role for, you know, in multiple ways. I think, again, the scholarship on gender and the Middle East and gender and Islam has always been subject, at least historically, if not even today, to some of these Orientalist interpretations and Orientalist frames. So by virtue of having AMU's, you sort of had that scholarship by the association set the tone and the appropriate paradigms for studying gender and sexuality in the context of the Middle East by experts who know the region. So too often that study was not by experts who knew the region and hadn't had a deep appreciation and deep contextual knowledge of the nuances of the region. So that was definitely a positive move forward for the association. Should I continue?
Yeah, continue.
So also, the association also became a venue where it mentors younger scholars who are working on gender of the Middle East, and young students who aspire to have academic careers in these areas. And so the association has played a very instrumental, invisible role to help sort of champion and lead, if you may, the younger cohorts into the study of gender and the Middle East. So that's been a very, again, positive accomplishment of the association. And then finally, I think what the association has done is that it's created this remarkable safe space, if you may, for scholars interested in studying issues linked to gender and the Middle East that might not find, you know, necessarily a home in other in some of the other disciplines like political science or sociology or anthropology, if you may, that they have found a comfortable place where they can talk about the issues that concern them and in a very intellectually stimulating and engaging environment. So that's also been a tremendous, I think, accomplishment of the association.
I hope so. What motivated you to join and become active?
So I was a graduate student when I joined. And I joined, when I first joined AMU's, it was in the late 1990s, early 2000s, as a graduate student at the University of Michigan. I had research interests on women and political participation. I was working on the Middle East, and I discovered AMU's, and what I discovered was just an amazing set of senior colleagues who were very supportive and embracing. You know, in political science, at the time when I was studying it, you know, gender was treated sometimes as just another variable. that you coded in this dichotomous form, and to basically find a place where people were really interested in the debates and the
took it very seriously,
but like we're also interested in the minutia and the details and the context. I just felt very much empowered by that in my own scholarship.
And now, can you tell us about your scholarship a little bit?
So my scholarship. So I'm a political scientist, and I work on issues that are linked to political development and democratization.
At that time, you were a graduate student where and working on what?
Oh, sorry. At that time, I was a graduate student at the University of Michigan working on my dissertation project, which was examining the role of civil society in the post-Oslo period in terms of championing or promoting democracy. And a big segment of the civil society sector in Palestine was led by women. So by virtue of studying that, I was studying women's movements in Palestine. And I had a lot of excellent material, and I was beginning to present at conferences, and that's where I discovered AMMUs.
So you gave a paper, or you attended a paper, or?
I gave a paper on a panel, and I can't exactly remember. I think it was either Su'ad or Miriam Cook or Sandra Hale. Oh, and the other thing is that when I was an undergrad at UCLA, I took Sandra Hale's class on gender as a student. So years later, also when I discovered Sandra at Mesa, and now I'm a PhD student, Sandra would say to me, oh, you should know so-and-so and so-and-so and so-and-so, and these were other people in AMMUs. Then I met Su'ad Joseph, and she would say, well, you have to come to the AMMUs. So it's a very welcoming environment. And, you know, when you're working on the Middle East and political science, at least at the time period that I was working on, it was a very small field. So to find the AMMUs academic crowd, it was very inspirational. It was very motivating. It was very encouraging. And at the time, AMMU said they needed a graduate student representative. And I was nominated. Looking back at it, it was so much work, Nancy, but when I was nominated, it was validating.
We were all in awe of you.
Yeah, well, it was
dependent on you also. Yeah,
it was
before long.
But for me, like sort of like feeling like, you know, I was, you know, a young graduate student, you know, working in a political science, you know, trying to make it in political science. I had young children at the time. To be validated and recognized by my senior colleagues really gave me some of that momentum to continue to do well, to sort of believe in myself. And so that to me meant so much. And I found a wonderful intellectual and scholarly community that gave me feedback on my work, and then also just, you know, were my mentors and supporters that I could look up to and sort of push forward.
So what motivated you to continue? You became treasurer at some point, I think?
So I was initially the graduate student representative, then I became the secretary.
And had you moved on into assistant professor?
I moved on to assistant professor and then became secretary.
At where?
I moved, my first position was at Columbia University for a year. And then I moved to Princeton University the year after that.
Mm-hmm. And so you're still there.
I'm still there now. Mm-hmm. So I've been now at Princeton for 17 years. Mm-hmm. And I became secretary, and then they merged the position of secretary and treasurer. So I was doing both the...
To get maximum work out of you, no
to
doubt.
To get more work out of me. And we were going through some financial problems as an association then, and we were always trying to come up with new plans to generate more income. So we were trying to revamp the newsletter. We were trying to make sure that members paid. That's when we started our listserv, where we disseminated a lot of information. And the association had begun negotiations with, at the time it was Indiana University Press, to start JAMES, the Journal of Middle East Women's Studies, and I was involved.
Do you remember that? Somebody, in the beginning, I think there was a thought of having a journal, but not for a while.
There was a thought of having a journal. There were a couple of organizing committees that sort of faltered. There were some divisions. And then, this is again what I remember, it was the year, Nancy, that Mesa was in Alaska.
Okay.
And that year, nobody really attended.
I didn't attend it.
You did not?
No.
And you're on the West Coast. All of us, like poor people, we flew up from the East Coast. But on that plane, coincidentally, it was Miriam Cook, who was now elected president of AMMUs. I was on that plane. That was a sheer coincidence. I'm the secretary treasurer. And I want to say the third person on that plane with us, which was, I think, sheer coincidence, and I could be wrong, but was Val Mogadam. And coincidentally, on that plane to Anchorage, which was like a 12-hour flight, was also the Indiana University Press publisher.
Janet Urbanowitz.
Yes. And we stood together in the galley of the plane talking and pitching the journal. And Janet was completely won over by this. So by the time we landed in Alaska, we had somebody who was really, really, really interested in the journal.
So we got the great, it's not the old boys network, it's the old girls network going now.
It was the old girls network stuck on this plane going to a conference that wasn't going to be well attended, so we could do nothing but mobilize and talk about the journal.
So what was your vision for the journal?
I thought, well, so we were in this world of, you know, there's all this great scholarship from the Middle East gender community that was not centrally located in any one journal. Not that there were other journals. I mean, Amira Sumbul had just started her own journal.
Hawa.
There were other efforts. And we did not want to, I remember very clearly, we always said, we don't want to compete. We don't want to replace. We just want to add. And we felt strongly, we felt that the newsletter was, the AMU's newsletter was a place where we were getting some very original and wonderful ideas, but they weren't expanded upon because of the limited size of the newsletter. And in this process of trying to attract more members, trying to make a stronger brand for AMU's, trying to get our name out there, that the journal would be very much beneficial to the field, but also to ourselves as an organization.
Was there concern that AMU's would become JMU's? That one would take over from the other and get more notice?
I don't think that, I'll be honest with you, initially we felt like JMU's was the baby of AMU's, so there wasn't this idea, at least in the initial stages, there was never this idea that AMU's or JMU's would be in competition with one another, or that we were worried about that. It's only when I remember, Nancy, if I recall correctly, it was only when we sat down to deal with the subscription package with JMU's at Indiana, in terms of, okay, well now, how are we gonna structure this financially, that we had to start saying, okay, here's what a membership / journal subscription will look like. This is how AMU's will remain autonomous from JMU's. But I don't ever think there was the worry that one would subsume the other. It was more about how can we make this viable so AMU's can generate some resources so that they can continue to be active at Mesa, while making sure that the journal was self-sustaining and meeting the expectations of the press as well.
That became very complicated, but that's probably a subject for another day with some materials in front of us. Mm-hmm. Let me ask you, what are your expectations for the future of AMU's and then JMU's?
So I think, honestly, Nancy, and maybe I don't know if this is just wishful thinking, I think where we are right now is very healthy. I think we still need to expand membership for AMU's. I think JMU's has a very healthy and robust subscription base, so there's room for improvement. I'd love for JMU's to be accessible to all Middle Eastern universities at a discount, and I know that the journal is offered at a discount right now, but just to make sure it's accessible to scholars in the region, and scholars in the region find the journal accessible in terms of just accessing, but also submitting articles to. I'd love to see the younger generation of scholars who are working on gender in the Middle East find AMU's and see in AMU's a vehicle which is not only a great vehicle for their own intellectual engagement, but it's a vehicle for networking and mentorship and community.
Can you think of articles you've read or assigned from JMU's? Have you used it in your teaching or even your research?
Yeah, no, I definitely, all of my students who even tangentially work on gender, I refer them over to JMU's. I make sure that they are subscribing to JMU's. Sometimes if the students can't afford it, I gift them subscription packages because I think it's very important for them to have access to the journal. Although Princeton University subscribes to JMU's right now, we have access to it.
With your registration fees, you should be able to get it through the library.
Exactly. So you know, all my colleagues and friends have published in JMuse, so I'm not gonna name any one article, but I'm a huge fan of the journal, and I think the work they do, both in the major research articles and then the side part, whether it was like the Third Space or other initiatives, I just think it's wonderful.
The Third Space has been getting a lot of notice, and also the artwork.
The artwork, I was going to say that the artwork is just beautiful. Like, it makes me want to frame. I have some of these JMuse hard copies up on my shelf, just beautiful.
Since you mentioned that, the idea came up at the meeting yesterday to blow up and frame some of the covers and then sell them or use them for fundraising purposes.
Oh, that would be awesome.
So in any case, let me just ask by way of conclusion, who are the people most instrumental in encouraging you to join or remain a member for the future? Because we want to include them in our interview process. Maybe you know them and we don't.
So I think the people who really influenced my participation in AMUs back in the day when I was a graduate student, I would say Jennifer Olmsted, who is now the current president of AMUs. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's sort of like this whole cycle because she was the newsletter editor, and then she did a lot of great work, and she had to step down from AMUs and, you know, do things with her career and her family. And then to see her come back and be president, it shows that people have this loyalty to the association that even after a decade, they will come back to the association. Jennifer, Nancy, you were very instrumental to my being involved in AMU's, always been supportive and welcoming.
And Sandra, of course.
And Sandra, of course. And Suad.
We're gonna get everybody going.
Absolutely. Miriam was very instrumental.
Miriam is on the list. Val, we're working on.
Yeah, Val Mugadam was very instrumental. And just people who... I'll be honest with you, the members who, I can go on and name them, who weren't really mm-hmm. in the leadership positions but always attended our business meetings, mm-hmm. always were enthusiastic to hear what we were up to. They sort of, the demand for what we were doing mm-hmm. is what inspired me to keep going.
Great. Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.